Welcome to Jumping Bomb Audio.
Everyone, and welcome back to Jumping Bomb Audio, the world's number one Joshi podcast. We are back for the first time in about a month, and we are back for the first time in the great year 2022. My name is Taylor, very happy to be back. And of course, as always, happy to be joined by my co-host and good friend, Kelly. Kelly, welcome to 2022.
Welcome back.
To Jumping Bomb Audio.
Thank you. I'm just full of anti-COVID microchips right now, and I'm ready to do this show. Beep, boop, boop.
That's right. You did get your booster yesterday, not to...
Yep. And it didn't kill me.
Not to break your HIPAA. not to break HIPAA violation rules.
Yeah, no, HIPAA I was only slightly comes worried. Into the fact when you when Brandi Rhodes pushes Kylie Rae into a pool. That's the only time that HIPAA comes into effect.
I was slightly worried you were going to wake up this morning, afternoon, whatever, and not be able to do the show, because when I got my booster, I was straight up laid out.
Yeah.
For the first half of the day after, I could not do anything.
I was really worried about that too. I think I got it out of my system with the second shot when I got such a high fever that I passed out in my bathroom.
But you are now super powered.
Yep.
And glad to be back with you on another episode of Jumping Bomb Audio, where we got a lot to talk about. But first, as always, please follow us on Twitter at JBomb Audio. Or if you want to follow us individually, you can follow Kelly at Comic Geek Kelly on Twitter and me at Tay Mambo on Twitter. Wherever you get your podcasts, give us a subscribe. It would be very helpful. And if that place is Apple Podcasts, give us a 5-star rating and review. We would really appreciate it. And if you're feeling extra generous, you can donate to the show at redcircle.com/shows/jumpingbombaudio. So we are going to get right into it. We are going to go in depth on the big January 4th Tokyo Joshi show that happened at Korakuen Hall, their big yearly show. And then we're going to cover all the things that happened in Stardom, in Seedling, in Oz, more shows with Tokyo Joshi. We had some fun prominence shows. We have some Sendai Girl stuff. We're covering it all. We got it all here, but we are going to dive right in to the Tokyo Joshi Pro 22, which was held January 4th at Korakuen Hall in front of 695 fans, which I believe is very close to the current full capacity of the building. So a good number for Tokyo Joshi. The show kicking off with a tag match, Arisa Endo and Suzume defeating Mahiro Kiryu and Moka Miyamoto in 11 minutes and 39 seconds. I'll throw it over to Kelly first. Kelly, I know you have one specific thought on this match because we did speak briefly as we were both watching the show live. So I'll throw it to you first.
Moka, honey, your new gear is no good. It's bad. It's really ugly gear. I don't know. It's like it's a half waist. Oh, yeah. You remember those Animorphs book covers?
Very much so. Yes.
It's the half step between her old gear and whatever her new gear should actually be. But it got like stuck mid transformation, and they're like, go here, just use this. Like, it's very strange.
Yeah, it's very strange to me because the parts of it I like are the parts that are clearly new.
Yeah.
And the parts of it I don't like are the parts that keep the sort of old. I've talked about on the show, I was not crazy about the old look, which was sort of like person who wandered in from the crowd to wrestle with the long skirt. And it's weird to me that they were like, the thing we really need to keep in this outfit is the skirt, the idea of this skirt, which is still there. And I'm like, I guess. So the new parts, I was like, oh, this is interesting. But they were like, no, it's almost like she's very famous for this gear. Like if she were very famous for the gear, they're like, well, we want to give her new gear, but we can't get totally rid of the old gear because people will get really upset.
Yeah, it's like WWE telling people they can't get a haircut because it messes with the toy deals or something.
But as for the match itself, I thought it was a solid match. I would have liked to see it a little bit farther up the card, maybe replacing or switching places, I should say, with a match we'll talk about in a little bit. But I thought a solid match. You know, I think Kiryu and Mocha are sort of now sort of firmly established on that sort of bottom level, unfortunately. And I think Endo and Suzume are moving up. I do think Tokyo Joshi has done a good job sort of calling an audible. They had the Suzume Mirai Mayumi team, which is no longer. And I've enjoyed that they have put Endo and Suzume together as a team. I think that's been sort of a very strong plan B for them.
Yeah, they're a good team. They have a really good just energy to them. And it's like, oh, this makes perfect sense. These two probably should have been together already.
Yeah, and it fits. And they get the win here. I think at the last Korakuen show, if I'm remembering correctly, they lost.
I think so, yeah.
So good to see them get a win, especially heading into the Max Hart tag tournament, which we'll talk about in a little bit,
and especially with it being Endo's 1 year anniversary, like that was cool.
Yeah, but overall I thought a solid start to the show.
Yeah, definitely a good opener.
The next match was the yearly tradition. It's a yearly tradition at these Tokyo Joshi January 4th shows, the match between Hyper Masao and Shoko Nakajima, which this year was a New Year Tiger Child Rescue Match, which I didn't even know until I looked at Cage Match that was the subtitle of the match. But it was a ladder match where you had to get a tiger, a stuffed tiger, I should say, not a real tiger, that was suspended above the ring. So, Kelly, what did you think of this match? Are you a fan of the annual Hyper Masao Shoko Nakajima comedy matches?
Yeah, I do enjoy the annual like just nonsense fest with those two. But I will say it causes me pain every time Nakajima uses her kaiju toys as weapons. Because like this time I was just I didn't rate the match because I was too distracted looking at the mat, looking at the toys, trying to identify what they were and who they were. And like, there was a bunch of money worth of toys there. Like, I know for sure I saw a Gamera figure that I bought from a dude on Instagram last year, Wrestle Kingdom Night 2. I was just looking through my phone and I was like, oh, I want that. And I started talking to him. So that Gamera for sure was like $50. Like, I don't know what kind of damage it takes, but I wouldn't want my toys getting beat up like that.
And this is not the first year that the toys have been featured.
Oh,
I think
they
were in last year, too. I wonder if they're the same ones or if they're different ones.
I wouldn't be surprised. I also noticed, like, because I went through and I found on Twitter someone posted a pretty decent quality picture, so I was able to identify a bunch of them. And there's a couple monsters, like she had a bunch of different Baltons from Ultraman and a bunch of different Red King figures. So it's like, they're clearly her collection. Like, these are just the it isn't like they went to some, like, I don't know, they have Toys R Us there still. Like, it just grabbed a bunch of Ultraman monsters off the racks and brought them in. Because, like, just looking at the sizes, these aren't the movie monster toys, which are, like, the general line you would see for, like, $15 or so in whatever department stores. Because, like, there's a couple different sizes of stuff. I know at one point there's, like, a Godzilla bootleg in there. So it's like that. These are she's a collector, and it's like how? I don't know, man. I couldn't do it.
Wow. I bet no one listening imagined that we'd get an edition of Collector's Corner with Kelly.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
In this match. I don't know anything about those things, so I was not concerned with their use in the match. I really liked the match. I usually, I think I always enjoy these matches. I thought Shoko Nakajima was very impressive in that she took some bumps. She took the bump on the ladder, which dented the ladder, that I'm like, you are really working very hard for a match that is
just she a did straight not have to do match. That.
And there was one other one, and now I can't remember what it was, but there were multiple times when I'm like, what? I'm like, I would not, if I were in this sort of comedy match, I would be focused on the comedy and I would not be taking any tough bumps. I would just be.
Well, this brings me, did you watch the hardcore match Misao had against Shunmo Katsumata?
I did not.
That match is
but
wild.
But I know you did.
Yes, that match is wild and kind of makes me think Misao should just transition to being a hardcore wrestler because it fucking rules.
Well, like, she had that match.
Nasty bumps in there.
She had that match many years ago with Jun Kasai.
Oh, yeah.
At a Tokyo Joshi show. I don't remember how many years ago that was, but I remember that one being really good as well. Now, I think that was more comedy, but if I remember correctly, I haven't seen it since it happened. That was, you know, not total comedy in that match. So maybe, you know, why don't they do a Hyper Misao Hikari Noah hardcore match?
Or hell, team those two up against like a Prominence Invasion or something.
Yes, we will be talking about Prominence a lot coming up on the show. But I hope that some, if not all, of Prominence will at some point show up in Tokyo Joshi, because I think it would be a lot of fun, and I think that they have a couple people on the roster already who would want to do that style, fit that style very well. So fingers crossed for that.
Yeah.
The next match was another tag match where Hakuchumu, the team of Miyu Watanabe and Rika Tatsumi,
I never knew that was their team name.
I didn't either until I, again, looked at it on Cage Match to get these results. Defeated the team of Nao Kakuta and Yuki Kamifuku. And I have to say that this match was probably my favorite of the undercard, I should say, up to probably the semi-main event. But of the non-title matches, I should say, this was probably my favorite match. I thought all four worked really hard. Obviously, the spot of the match was Nao Kakuta's head bouncing off the corner after Rika drop kicked her, which looked very painful. I can't talk badly about her after she did that. And then just kept going. I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
And then the match just sort of continued. But I thought all four looked really good. I thought, you know, Nao Kakuta looked very good. As someone going in, I probably would have said of the four of them, she would probably be, you know, the fourth of four in terms of who do I think are the best in-ring people. But I thought they all acquitted themselves well. I thought it was a really fun match. Like, for me, it would have been like 3.5 in that range. But I thought it was a lot of fun. But of course, the thing that everyone's going to remember is that crazy head bouncing off the stanchion.
Yeah, that was gross. She's lucky she didn't just get knocked out from that, because that was nasty and it made a weird ding noise. But yeah, that was a really good match. I went 3.5 on it too. Just everyone was working really hard in this match and pretty hard hitting. And like, I assume it was to get Hakuchumu back in like tag title contention, you know, to have them win here. But yeah, overall, really good match. Definitely agree with you on it being the best of the undercard.
The next match was a 6-person tag. The team of Harunu Neko, the for one night only returning Nodoka Onesan and Yuki Aino, defeating Marika Kobashi, Pom Harajuku, and Raku. For me, there is no match that screams opening match more than this match. And the fact that it was fourth from the bottom was really wild to me. I have to say this just as a personal thing. Nodoka was, when I started watching Tokyo Joshi, which was a number of years ago, she was in the Onisan character. And then I think sort of, it may have been 6 months in or a number of months in, she switched to her current sort of quote unquote current character. I never really connected with the Onisan character. That was not really very exciting to me. So this sort of the draw of like, this beloved character is coming back, I was sort of like, I don't care. Which is probably why it was not the first match, and also probably why I thought that this match wasn't very good. Not entirely surprising looking at the list of competitors, but you know, it is what it is. Kelly, were you more positive on this match? What do you think of the returning Nodoka Onesan?
That character was from before my time watching Tokyo Joshi, so I had no idea what was happening. I was very confused. It was a very unremarkable match outside of the confusion. I think I went like 2 on it. It's fine, I guess. But yeah, definitely it should have been in the opener slot and maybe a pre-show. I don't know. It was whatever.
I think the first box of True Hearts Joshi cards I got had a Nodoka Onesan autograph in it. But I think that was the moment where like she signed it as that character, but by the time the box had come out, she had switched to Nodoka Tenma. So it was like a weird thing where it was like, oh, is this like a collector's item that it's this old character that now doesn't exist? But I still have the card. But that's also what I think of when I opened the box and I went, oh, this character is not even around anymore. Very weird. But anyway,
eBayed it the night of the show. Maybe gotten a nice bump from that.
Yeah, I have some, you know, I haven't looked at them in a little bit. The new ones are coming out in a few months, but there are some where I'm like, I could probably put these on eBay and get a good, you know, get a good chunk of change. I don't know if that's one of them.
Yeah, I bought
a feeling that might be one of the less popular ones.
I recently bought a box of like the most recent Topps WWE set just because they looked cool. Like they were done in the old school card style. It's like that. They look cool. It was a cheap enough box. I got an Alexa Bliss autograph in there, so I need to pop that on eBay to sell it to some pervert. Because I'm sure I could get a good amount of money from that.
I think the only box of WWE cards I ever bought, I got a piece of the ring mat from the Royal Rumble with Titus O'Neil. It was like a Titus O'Neil autograph.
Was it the one where he fell under the ring?
No, it was This was a number of years ago, but I remember being like, well, this is not worth anything.
Years and years ago, I got a pack that had a chunk of the ring from a WrestleMania, and it was like specifically the Ric Flair versus Undertaker match. So I was like, oh, there might be some like hepatitis in here.
I never really understand, like, oh, it's a piece of the ring. Like, great. Like, I don't
it could really be any fabric.
You're like, ooh. Yeah. You're like, ooh, like, show it to your friends. Ooh, look, this is one small inch of a ring mat that they were probably like, well, we can't use this again. It's too dirty. Okay, yeah. We'll cut it up and give it to, you know, these people.
This is what a wrestling ring feels like.
Yeah.
Or a kiss card. There you go. Kiss card. I was explaining to my coworker what kiss cards were, and she was very surprised those exist, and then she thought, like, no, this makes sense. I think they still do the kiss cards for the WWE sets. Like, I had to look it up.
I think they do.
Yeah,
I think they do.
Because I saw one where it was like a Mandy Rose kiss card, and I was like, that's too recent for them to have stopped doing that.
But anyway, back to Tokyo Joshi. The next match was our first of three singles matches at the top of the card. This one was not for a title, but it was Yuka Sakazaki defeating Yuki Arai in 12 minutes and 51 seconds. Kelly, what'd you think of this match?
I thought it was good. Another really strong showing for Arai. She's got like really good facial expressions in the ring. Like, you know, because there's a lot of people who in their early days, they're either stone-faced or you can tell their face is kind of like, I don't know what to do. It's like when you take a picture and you're like, what do I do with my hands? I never think about this. But like, so she definitely has thought about this, and she's got really good facial expressions and stuff. Like I think it was when she had a Yuka and a submission. I can't remember what, but she like looked like a maniac. Like she was like going to rip her leg off of her. It was awesome. That being said, I do think it's my least favorite of the trial series so far. Like I think her match against Rika was way better. I don't know. I thought they just didn't have like the best chemistry, but that being said, I still really liked it. I went like 3¾.
Yeah, I agree with you that I think this was probably, I liked the Rika match, more than this, not like, oh, that was really great, this is really bad.
Yeah.
I thought the story was a little bit more focused of Rika, as we talked about last time, Rika sort of focusing on the body, you know, focusing on the leg, working the leg, being like, that's your thing. And then Yuki Arai sort of came out in this match and it was like, okay, still doing the kicks, which I'm like, okay, not the end of the world. And I think she did mention in the post-match promo or interview or some interview somewhere that she was like, oh, I do have to work on varying my adding moves, varying my offense, which I was like, oh, okay, that's sort of what I was looking for. I liked that she added the sharpshooter, the scorpion deathlock, whatever you want to call it. They were calling it multiple things on commentary. By the way, speaking of the commentary, I thought it was good, but I'd just like to say to Tokyo Joshi, I think they should just keep it as Chris Brooks and Balianaki.
It really felt like they had someone with them to keep them behaved.
Although it felt like halfway through the show, they were like, this is sort of weird, so let's just do our two-person commentary.
Uh-huh.
And if like something if something else gets said, we'll sort of deal with it. And if not, we'll just do two-person commentary.
Yeah, pretty much.
I remember it during this because she put on the sharpshooter and I think Brooks was like, it's a sharpshooter. And he was like, it's a scorpion deathlock. And I'm like, okay, those are the same things. let's just call it one thing. But I liked that she added that. That was good. So I thought a good match. And excited. You know, I feel like these matches I end, even the matches I'm not crazy about, I'm like, ooh, I'm excited to see more, even though this match I wasn't, you know, over the moon about, because I think that she is getting better. Yuki Arai, I should say, is getting better. And it's like, oh, can't wait to see what happens sort of down the road. The semi-main event, the first of two title matches, was for the International Princess title. Maki Ito defeating Hikari, the champion, Hikari Noah, the longest reigning international princess title holder, in 16 minutes and 9 seconds. Kelly, I'll go to you first. I have some thoughts on this match. What are your thoughts on this match?
I liked this match a lot. I really enjoyed the story of kind of it being Maki like really outclassing Hikari in the beginning, and then Hikari kind of stepping up her game throughout the match to make it more even between them. But you know, Ito is still just going after her back the whole time, which finally led to the finish. I thought it was really good. I went 4 stars on it. I believe this is the match where I took off a quarter star because I lost my fantasy football game during it. I think that's when this was.
I think that is correct.
Yeah.
Because you did message me that.
Yeah. That's what happens when you lose by like 1 point. It sucked. I hated it.
That's what happens.
Yeah.
It's so funny because I went into this match, you know, 2 weeks ago or a month ago, or maybe it was 2 episodes ago or something. We had talked about the Tokyo Joshi. We were like, okay, we figured out the story. Which is that like Maki Ito is going to lose and Mizuki is going to win the Princess of Princess title and it's going to be this whole thing. And so I was going in being like, Hikari No is going to win. And Bali Inaki actually said on commentary at one point, he said, you know, Hikari No is the champion, but it feels like getting a win over Maki Ito would be big. Like bigger than Maki Ito defeating Hikari Noah, who is the champ. Like, it's the other way around. It's one of those, you know,
yeah,
they're the champion, but they have to prove themselves against someone, which happens a lot. But I thought that was sort of true. And then Ito won and I was like, yeah, I guess what was I thinking? Because it feels to me in a way almost like Ito is at too high a level for this title, where it's like, if she challenges for the title, of course she's going to win. Like, she's inches away from getting the top title, so it doesn't make sense that she would challenge then for this sort of quote-unquote lower title and not win. So she won, and I was like, yeah, I guess that makes sense. But then I was like, oh, maybe Mizuki doesn't win the title because this doesn't really line up with any of the sort of story that I had made up in my head that I was like, wow, this is really good that Tokyo Joshi's running this story that really I had made up completely.
Yeah.
I also really liked the match. I went 4 stars. I don't do fantasy football, so I would have been 4 stars regardless. So I thought it was really good. I think Maki Ito has really improved in ring. I thought Noah did very well. I thought that she had a really good, you know, her title reign sort of started out. It was like, okay, this is sort of interesting. This is good. And I think her last, couple of defenses, this one, obviously where she lost, her last one really solidified sort of this reign. And I was like, oh, she had a really good reign. She had good matches. She really sort of stuck herself up in that upper mid level where I think, you know, like someone like Yuki Kamifuku was when she was holding the title, sort of moving them up to the next level that I'm hoping that, you know.
Yeah, I think being champion has made her a better wrestler for sure.
Well, yeah, you get in higher profile spots and you're wrestling, you know, higher, you know, some higher people, not always, you know, she wrestled Marika Kobashi, but, you know, wrestling Maki Ito, who's at the top or near the top of the company, is helpful for someone who is improving. So I think that she got a lot better. So I like the match, and we'll talk about story stuff more in the next match, which was the main event, the Princess of Princess title match, where the champion Miyu Yamashita retained in 19 minutes and 12 seconds, defeating Mizuki in her 4th attempt to win this title. She falls and is unsuccessful again. Kelly, what did you think of this match?
Poor Mizuki got the shit kicked out of her in this match. Like, Miyu was just going hard as hell in this match. It was a really just hard fought match from both of them, but just some of the kicks and the final 2 knee strikes that Miyu hit on Mizuki were just insane looking. So I really enjoyed it. I love a good hard hitting match like this. I don't love the booking, but going into Sumo Hall, it makes sense having Miyu and Maki as your 2 top champions. So, like, I get it. I went 4.25. I really liked it.
Well, we're in sync once again. I also went 4.25 on this match. I thought it was really good. As you said, I thought Miyu was great. But really, You know, I also thought Mizuki was great. I mean, she had those two double stomps, the one from the top turnbuckle to the floor, which looked really good. And then there was the one, the double stomp to the back of Miyu's head, which I thought looked really good, really crazy.
Yeah.
I will say double stomps are one move in wrestling that I, you know, some moves in wrestling, you sort of figure out how they do them and you're like, oh, here's how they make it look, you know, hard hitting, or they make it look really effective. Double stomps are a thing where I'm like, if I was a wrestler, I would tell whoever I was wrestling, you cannot double stomp me.
Yeah, no, there's like sometimes you can tell like a little bit where it's like, oh, okay. So they like aim further than they are. So it's like their toes take most of the impact on the mat. But even a lot of times that doesn't even happen either. So it's like no two double stompers are alike.
Yeah, and I'm like, I don't, you know, you can say, oh, they slide off or they do, they distribute their weight this way, which I understand. But I would never say to anyone, yeah, go up there, go like 5 feet up, I'll lay down on the ground and you're going to jump and try and land on me feet first.
Yeah.
Even if you're going to slide off, I'm like, that sounds unpleasant.
Yeah, that's still just going to feel horrible. Because like even then, I just imagine you're going to get like, rubber burn or whatever on you from the shoes.
Or it's like, oh, I'll just slide off and you, and then you're like, well, then you're just jumping onto my arm.
Yeah.
Which seems more dangerous. So anyway, I thought the match was really great. My controversial opinion I have here is, maybe it's not a controversial opinion, but it's a hot take. I think besides Miyu, who obviously is the ace of the company, always is having these great single matches. If you asked me to pick one wrestler in the company, you said you need to have a great singles match against whoever, doesn't matter, I would pick Mizuki over everyone else in the company. I would pick her over Yuka Sakazaki. I would pick her over Shoko Nakajima. I think that in these big matches, she proved it at the first Wrestle Princess with that great match that got all that hype. This match was really good. I think she has proven she is very good in these singles scenarios in a way that I think maybe Yuka Sakazaki's ceiling is higher, but I think on a consistent basis, I think Mizuki delivers the best, obviously not including Miyu Yamashita, who would be number one, but number two to me is Mizuki.
Yeah, I would totally agree. And yeah, I think Yuka's got a slightly higher ceiling. But sometimes she has those misses. But Mizuki, incredibly consistent every time. You're going to get a great match out of her.
So my final thing is, you briefly mentioned it. My thing is, and I said this right after the show ended, I think, to you. I am, you know, it's funny because two times ago when we talked about, after Wrestle Princess 2, when we talked about Tokyo Joshi, I was not crazy on the booking. Then we talked about them again, and I was like, oh, I figured it out. Now I'm back on Tokyo Joshi. I've like solved it, but it turns out I didn't solve it at all. And now I'm sort of back to where I was before, which is I'm like, I don't quite understand. I sort of understand from the perspective of, I understand that Sumo Hall is coming up. I understand that you need to book people who you think are going to be a draw. So you make Yamashita the champion, you make Ido the champion. That I understand. And people who are like, that's what they're doing. I get that on the level of sort of, it feels to me very win the battle and not win the war to me.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very much, it's, I don't want to say short-sighted, but it's just, it's definitely only in service of the business end rather than the narrative end of it. When by and large, the narrative end will end up paying off in the business end if you keep it strong.
Yeah. And my thing is, I think that they are, you know, sort of, the narrative end is one part of it. But the fact that we now sort of have this grouping of people who are seemingly sitting right underneath the top level and can't seem to make that step, you know, Maki Ito, Mizuki being the two sort of 1A and 1B, however you want to put them. There's got to be a chance, or there's got to be a moment, and this is true for any wrestling company, you've got to take chances on someone because, yes, you can put, and after the match, we haven't said this, Miyu Yamashita called out Shoko Nakajima, so it will be Yamashita versus Nakajima at Sumo Hall on March 19th. That, they feel, is the biggest match. But part of it is this idea that is... like, well, we don't think Mizuki can draw. And it's like, well, Mizuki might not be able to draw because she's now challenged for the title four times and she's never won it.
Yeah. You're creating your own problems with Ben.
Right. It's that weird thing where, and I mentioned this right after, it feels sort of like that mid-2000s Ring of Honor problem where someone would be really hot and you'd be like, this is it. And they would lose. And you'd be like, oh, well. Oh. And then, like, a year later, they would get the title, and it would be like, well, this is great, but I wish it would have happened a year ago.
Poor Mizuki is Tyler Black.
The Nigel Maki Ito, the Nigel McGuinness of Ring of Honor.
Oh, man, if Shoko wins, if Shoko wins, she'll be the Jerry Lynn. I remember being so mad when Jerry Lynn won the title. Like, I was inconsolable, just so mad, where I'm like, there's a billion other people to give the belt, and this old man comes in, you give him the title, and I feel like that's what'll happen if Shoko wins.
I feel like I was out of, like, by that time I was sort of falling out of Ring of Honor, and then it was like, oh, Jerry Lynn won, and I was sort of like, okay, like, I'm now sort of not invested in any of this.
Yeah.
Because it had moved on and they were doing the pay-per-views and like I wasn't getting the pay-per-views. So I was feeling like I'm like, oh, I'm out of the loop anyway. And now Jerry Lynn's winning the title and well, whatever. but anyway, that speaks to the point of it just feels like sooner rather than later, they've got to take a chance on one of these people. We talked about it with Stardom, which was, you know, a long time ago, Mayu having the title. And that's very easy. Mayu is the ace of the company. She's long tenured. She's been there since the beginning. She's beloved by everyone. And you could run her out a million times. People love her. They would probably come to see her in some numbers. But at some point, you got to take a chance on someone else because Mayu is not going to last a million years. She's not going to be, you know, able to do that. And probably the numbers will go down. And it's better to have three people who you can put at the top rather than two, or having five people instead of four. And I just think like Mizuki is going to challenge again and it's going to be time number five. And when does that happen now?
Yeah.
Does that happen in another 2 years? Like, it's just very strange to me where, again, I had this idea in my head. I was like, wow, this is brilliant. And now that idea is out and I'm like, does Shoko Nakajima beat Miyu Yamashita and that's the end of this huge title reign? Is it just goes to someone else who's already been champion?
I really hope not, because that's an incredibly boring choice.
Like, it was sort of confusing when Miyu won the title in the first place, and it seems like at every moment when it's like, ah, the whole point of this was, you know, it was, oh, the whole point of it is it's building so Maki can beat Miyu and have the big moment. Nope, that wasn't it. The big point of it was that Mizuki is finally going to get the win over Miyu, something that Maki couldn't do. Nope, that wasn't it either. And I'm just sort of like, are they leading to Maki Ito being double champion? I'm like, I sort of hope not, because I'm tired of this double champion nonsense that seemingly
everyone's got to dash for the double gold.
Every company in Japan is now doing, oh, double champion, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, don't care.
I wonder if they changed their plans when, I mean, and we don't even know if this is the plan or not. It seems like they're going to get Thunder Rosa in the country for the Sumo Hall show to go up against Maki. It makes me wonder if they changed their plans because of that.
I don't even know if that's the case because exactly. Maki's whole talk was, oh, I'm going to come to America and defend the title against you. And I'm like, well, does it happen in AEW? Because I thought that as well. I thought, oh, maybe they bring in Thunder Rosa and that's another sort of big name to have on this Sumo Hall card, because the card now is Yamashita Nakajima. I would assume Ito against someone.
Yeah.
Magical Sugar Rabbits against someone. And I would think at Sumo Hall, you're going to have to bring people in. Like, I don't know. Maybe they do, like we talked about, maybe they do bring in Prominence, but I'm like, I'm not sure Prominence is going to be.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know.
That would be a good place to run Suzuki or Suzu Suzuki versus Hikari Noah.
Is Nakajima Yamashita, like, gonna draw huge? It just feels like a match that's like, these are people who have been at the top, I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think that's a drawing match.
And now I'm like, okay, so whoever comes out, it could be Yamashita, could be Nakajima, whoever comes out as champion, I'm like, when, I don't know, when does sort of the next part, does Ito win the title at some point, but maybe that doesn't happen till the fall. I'm like, that's a long time now.
Yeah, it's weird. I don't know. Like, I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt. I'm like, I'm actually willing to do the let it play out thing here because the shows are good. Like, I enjoy it, what they're doing for the most part. So as long as the show quality keeps up, I'll keep letting it play out. But once we get to the point where it's like, oh, this booking is just complete trash, then we can jump on it. But for now, I'm willing to do the let it play out.
No tienes que esperar a que te paguen para finalmente invitar a tus papás a comer. Solo te tiene que salir una oferta de sus favoritos en el McDonald's app. Ahorra con el app. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. En McDonald's participantes.
Well, that is all for the big Tokyo Joshi Korakuen Hall show, our big review. Next, we are going to move on to Stardom. We're not going to cover any of these shows, individual matches. There's a lot of shows to cover is the main reason why. But we are going to touch on all the shows that have happened. The first one, obviously, their big end of the year show on December 29th. Big things happening there. Well, for Kelly, big thing happening, Ruaka losing the Future of Stardom title. And then in the semi-main, Saya Kamatani winning the title from Tam Nakano. And in the main event, Siri finally defeating Utami and becoming champion. So Kelly, I guess I'll ask you, what were your overall thoughts on the show?
Well, going to the Ruaka Hanan match, I like Hanan's new music. Is it new? Because I don't remember hearing it. And now it's stuck in my head ever since this show.
I have to say, I don't remember what Hanan's music was as I watched this show almost 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. It's like just someone going, H-A-N-A-N, Hanan, H-A-N-A-N, Hanan. Like, it's that just plays through my head every now and then. And it's like, oh, we're back here again, huh? Yeah, no, I enjoy it. I'm happy to see the fall of Ruaka. The reign of terror is over.
Yeah, I thought it was. I'll just say I thought it was a solid show. I'm intrigued to see Saya Kamatani's reign with the title. I thought Tom, as we talked about, sort of a dud reign after the first month, really. And I'm also excited to see Siri as champion. She did drop the SWA title. It is not becoming defunct, so we'll see what happens with that, but she is no longer SWA champion. But I thought they had another very good match. I saw people throwing 5 stars at it. Once again, I was very close to what I was in their first match. I thought it was very similar. I thought Siri was by far the stronger member of the match, I guess I'll say. I think that she largely is what they want Utami to be.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of this come out ass kicker, but Siri has so much more sort of natural charisma, natural personality to her. I think her matches flow a lot better than Utami's, and I think that's why I've enjoyed. I went 4.5 stars on the main event, which is exactly what I did for their first one, which had the two time limit, the two draws in it. And I have to say, I'm very much more looking forward to a Stardom with Siri on top than the excitement I had for Utami.
Yeah, and I think the Siri, it just comes down to experience. I mean, she's been doing this for a lot longer. And so it's like, okay, this, like you said, this is what they want Utami to be. So they're just like, okay, follow her model, essentially. That match, I don't know, it didn't connect with me as much as it did in their past matches. I only went 4 stars on it. I liked it, but I don't know. I think why these matches don't hit me the same way that they do with a lot of other people is, to me, they feel much closer to a big, like, New Japan main event than, like, what I expect from a big Joshi main event. And so it's kind of just not what I want when I'm watching that, you know what I mean? It's like, when I'm watching Joshi, I want Joshi. When I'm watching New Japan, I want New Japan. It's like, I don't want to go to McDonald's and get spaghetti.
Yes, I totally understand. Although I think there are some countries you could probably go to. Are you saying you don't often go to Jollibee? Have you ever been to a Jollibee?
No. What is this?
Oh, a Jollibee is it's a fast food place from somewhere in Asia. I don't remember exactly where. They serve chicken, like chicken sandwiches, but they also serve spaghetti.
Fantastic.
It's wild. There's one in New York that I went to a while back, because I also didn't really know what it was. And I was like, oh, an interesting sort of like fast food place. I'll go in. And they were like, you want a chicken sandwich or do you want this thing of spaghetti? And I was like, what? I think I ended up getting a chicken sandwich because I couldn't wrap my head around going to a fast food place and being like, here's a thing. And it's like the spaghetti, but then it's sort of like the Cincinnati like chili spaghetti too, I think.
Okay.
Where they're like, oh, here's spaghetti, and then we'll put a lot of like meat on the top of it.
I just pictured the spaghetti coming in like the kind of like cardboard thing that you get fries in.
No, I've never had it, so I don't know what it comes in. If you're a big Jollibee fan, tweet at us at JBombAudio, and let us know what your favorite menu item at Jollibee is. Maybe I'll go back and get that, because there's one very close to me that I don't go to that often. But anyway.
Yeah. But you know what? On this show, I think I enjoyed the Saya and Tom match a lot more than the main. I went 4.5 on that one. I thought it was great. But there was one bit that got me. And it's in today in Kelly Hates the Stardom Ref. There is a bit when Tom suplexed Saya and Saya's legs went into the ropes, and the referee stopped, looked at her legs in the ropes, then quickly remembered he was not supposed to see that and started counting, and then lifted up his head to go, oh, her feet are in the ropes. It's like, no, just don't count the pin at all.
Nothing gets past Kelly.
No, I hate him. I hate him so much. He's a bad referee.
All right. Well, anyway, on that point, that was the end of Stardom's 2021. They started 2022 with a short show on January 3rd, which was part of the Stardom Awards. The main event was Donna Del Mundo versus the Cosmic Angels, with the two Momo masks making their official debut, revealing themselves as Tekla and the newly shortened Mirai, in all caps, the former Mirai Mayumi. I think not all that surprising. I think Mirai Mayumi had been the leading guess for a long time. I mean, this Momo Mass thing has been going on for months.
Yeah.
And Tekla, I also saw a bunch of people guessing that.
Not Tekla makes perfect sense. Like, that one is like, oh yeah, because I had never actually thought of it. But when, as soon as she took off the mask, is like, oh yeah, no, that's perfect. Okay, this fits. Mirasso, yes, so, doesn't make any goddamn sense.
Yes, and I will say that I am a big fan of Mirai Mayumi, as I've talked about on this podcast before. I will say she debuted, and I have to say she's got to get rid of her haircut makes her look like sort of like a 45-year-old like divorcee.
Oh, she's going to ask for the manager? Crisis.
She's next to Julia, who's like wearing an eye patch. She's got dreadlocks.
Yeah.
Like, Tekla's got all these ropes on her gear and she's got this bleach blonde hair. And then Mirai's like standing there with this very close cut, like, haircut. And I'm like, if it were me, if I were Stardom, I would have her come out and be like, it's so weird to me that she isn't dressed almost like a Micah or someone like that, like come out and look really tough.
Yeah.
Like, I would think that's the whole thing. And she came out and she was like smiling.
She looked very happy to be here.
Yeah. And like Julie and Tekla are hugging and she's sort of just like standing in the background. And I'm like, but I will say that I thought the match was excellent.
Yeah, the match was really good.
I will say, not to spoil my upcoming thoughts, but everything that they have done, or at least everything they've done that I've seen, because they haven't posted all of the January 8th and January 9th shows, everything that they've done so far in 2022 is the Stardom that I want. When I sit on here and I'm like, I'm being driven crazy by these by these singles matches. I'm being driven crazy by there's never any storylines. I'm being driven crazy by why aren't the tag titles main eventing shows? And they've done all of this. I thought that this multi-person tag was really fun. And I was like, this is the Stardom that I like. When it's like really talented people, they're going 100 miles an hour. They're throwing bombs at each other. They're in and out of the ring. They're breaking up pins. Although there was one pretty bad botch of Unagi not getting in to break up a pin. The ref didn't count it, even though Mai Sakurai's shoulders were just laying on the mat.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
And I was like, well, it first happened and I was like, wait a minute, did I miss something? And then I went back and I watched and I was like, Unagi was supposed to come in and break up the pin and didn't make it in time. But like, I thought this was fun. I thought Tekla looked really good. Like, I thought Mirai looked really good. I'm really glad to have Julia back. I thought she was great. Like, I really enjoyed the whole thing and I thought it made everyone look great. Like, even Cosmic Angels, they didn't win the match, but I thought that they kept up well with this sort of new team. So it was all like thumbs up for me. I would say, please, people in Ice Ribbon, stop leaving Ice Ribbon like in the lurch and going to Stardom. That sort of is sucky. Don't do that. But, you know, I like Tekla being in the company because she feels like someone who doesn't immediately need to like be pushed all the way to the top. Although knowing Stardom, it might happen. Mirai, I'm very interested to see. She's now in Donna del Mundo. She's in a group. You know, I just think of Donna del Mundo. I'm like, it's a huge group now. Obviously Julia and Shuri are the top level. And then it's like Himika, Micah, Natsupoi, Mirai. Like, who is getting the push there?
Yeah, you know, I think it's going to turn into Mirai being the one that takes losses. Like, I think she'll be booked strong initially to give her credibility. But after that, I could see her being, for lack of a better term, the jobber of the group.
Yeah, because I don't really see, you know, I look at the group and I'm like, well, they could split the group and it could, you know, Shuri could run her own group. But then I'm like, that group is Shuri, you know, Natsupoi, Mirai. I don't know what the split would be.
Take Konami with her, maybe.
Well, Konami is
What's happening with Konami right now? Like,
I think it's TBD.
Okay.
I think is what's happened. Well, she's not wrestling now, is what's happening at the current moment.
Okay.
But the future is sort of TBD. But anyway, it is a weird thing where I look at this group and I'm like, who's going to lose matches? But of course, the answer might be they just do time limit draws, which they had a time limit draw already this year.
Reset the counter.
I'll get more into that coming up very shortly. But, you know, it is weird. It's like Oedo Tai now has 8 people and like they have like 5 lost posts in that group. And Donna Del Mundo has no one.
Yeah, what if it's just everyone loses to, or Oedo Tai just loses to everyone, so no one has to actually lose in these other groups?
Oedo Tai, who I think absurdly won the best unit award at the Stardom Awards. a unit that we have consistently said did not have a great year.
No.
It had a good end of the year. But yes, overall, a very good debut for Tekla and Mirai, a very good match. Very happy to have Julia back in the fold here. So that was on January 3rd. On January 8th and 9th, they had 2 back-to-back shows at Corican Hall. The currently only the main events are up. So I have seen both, and I think Kelly has seen the main event of the show on the 9th.
The 8th. I saw Momo
on the 8th. Okay. So the first on the 8th was a main event between the newly turned Oedo Tai member Momo Watanabe and Azumi, a match that ended when Momo loaded up her kick pad with a foreign object and just booted Azumi in the face with it.
Yeah, that was a cool finish.
To get the knockout. Another match I thought was really fun. I thought the ending was good. And here is where I get on my soapbox, which is that I saw a bunch of people saying, well, why is Momo winning with this sort of foreign object? She's good enough that she should be able to win matches with just her talent. I'm like, first of all, that's the point.
Yeah.
She's a heel.
And she had the pin before. Like, she lifted Azumi's head up, so she clearly could have gotten it. She just chose to be a dick.
And it made perfect sense. She blows up the boot, she kicks Azumi in the face, and they're like, Azumi is out and the match is over. And then Azumi was not on the 1-9 show, which I'm not sure if that was storyline or if she is nursing an injury.
She actually got kicked in the head with a wrench.
But I'm like, this makes perfect sense. And the same people who are like, time limit draws are great because blah, blah, blah. It's the same people saying time limit draws are great are sitting here going, how could a heel do this dastardly thing and kick the shit out of someone and win? Like, I'm like, that's the point.
Yeah.
That's the whole thing. I also have to say, Kelly, I'm going to ask you a hypothetical question.
Okay.
Which I thought of when I was watching this. Let's just imagine. Let's just say you had a group, a wrestling group, a wrestling faction, and in it you had Momo Watanabe, you had Starlight Kid, at one point you had Konami. Would you make the leader of that group Natsuko Tora?
I mean, it makes the most sense to do that, right?
Oh, no. She was introducing Momo at the beginning. I was like, you are a geek.
Yes,
get
she needs to be thrown out of the group or something. Like, so many people should be taking over the group from her.
I'm like, Momo better be the leader of this group in the next month, or yes. I don't know what I'm gonna. Because I'm like, what? I'm like, you
Starlight
are down.
Kid took over essentially. Like, I don't get it.
But I'm like, I know there's a lot of people who are going to get very mad at me for saying that because a lot of people really like Tora. I've never understood it. I have never thought that, you know, I think she's a perfectly fine sort of mid-carder. You know, it's sort of like now I see it as Momo and Starlight Kid at the top. Then the sort of middle is like Saki and Natsuko Tora. And then the bottom is Ruaka and Hina.
Yeah. Yonayama, like, and the
that's
children.
That's the levels for me. Yeah. Oh, and Yonayama, who's sort of like whatever. I forgot about Death Yama-san. Because she's someone, it's like, oh, she could win, she could lose, it doesn't really matter. Mm-hmm. But anyway, that was just a thing that she came out and she's like, I'm here to introduce the new Momo Watanabe. And I had sort of forgotten about, because she's been out injured. And I was like, oh yeah, you are technically the leader of this group that now has many very cool and, you know, popular people in it. Like, it made sense when she was in the group and there was like, it was like her and Saki and like an injured Natsu Sumire and Death Yama-san. I'm like, that makes sense. I'm like, now Starlight Kid, now Momo Watanabe, give it to one, let one of them do it.
I did like anyway, when she was saying like, oh, you all came here to see me, and just crickets. Like, just nothing.
But anyway, a very good match, a match I enjoyed. Kelly, did you enjoy the match?
Yeah, I went 4 stars on it. Momo's kicks just looked so brutal, and I really loved it. I thought it was great. The entire time I'm watching the match, I keep looking at Momo, and I'm thinking, she must have just gone to the hairdresser and asked for the Maya Yukihi. Because, like, they have the same hair now.
The January 9th show, well, first of all, I should mention at the beginning of the show, Momo Kogo, formerly of Actress Girls, came out to express her interest. I think that's the proper way to put it, to express her interest in wrestling in Stardom. So someone new, you know, obviously Actress Girls does not exist anymore, although Saki has started or has announced that the Colors brand will be resurrected as a separate wrestling group in February. But Momo Kogo leaving Actress Girls as it shuts down, coming to Stardom, I think a solid. I've always really liked Momo Kogo. I think that she was one of the better in-ring workers in Actress Girls. And I think it's a solid, solid pickup for Stardom.
Yeah, Kelly, I got a message from in the VOW Slack from Liam of You've Gotta Be Kidding Me fame. And all the message said was something like, what's up with this new Momo? And I had just woken up. I had no idea what was happening. I was like, they're doing another one? Doesn't Donald Del Mundo have enough people? He's like, no, a literal Momo. Send me your name. I'm like, oh, okay, this makes more sense.
By the way, unrelated, I'm so glad the Momo mask thing is over, because I hate the Momo. outside of the Stardom, I hate looking at the Momo mask. Like, to me, it's a visual, like, nails on a chalkboard thing, because I think they're so horrifying.
Oh, yeah. No, it's upsetting.
Like, so off-putting that I'm glad it's done. But yes, glad to see Momo Kogo appear. We'll see what happens with her. But the main event of the January 9th show, Hazuki and Koguma cashing in their tag tournament victory and winning the tag titles from the very successful team of Julia and Shuri in a match that I thought was really good. I super enjoyed it. I have been asking Stardom to main event with tag title matches. Obviously, they couldn't with Julia out, but they do it here. And for the third show in a row, I had a lot of fun and I enjoyed it. Kelly, what did you think? Oh, no, Kelly, you didn't see it.
It was great.
Yes.
No, I'm excited to watch it. It seems weird. It almost seems like now maybe they should have had Siri and Julia drop the belts, like just vacate them so you don't have your champion losing here, but
it does seem weird to me that it's like, wow, Shuri, she's very powerful, she has 3 titles, and then within the span of like one day it's like, whoops, she has 1 title.
Yeah, it's not the best look.
At the end of the match, Himika and Mika came out to challenge. They were the previous, right? It's been so long. They were the previous tag title holders.
I think so
that
yeah.
Match will be coming up. Also, I should say that we, at the time of recording, Stardom does have a show on January 10th. By the time this show is out, I should say. That show will have already happened, but it hasn't happened yet, so we can't talk about it. Seedling had their big end of the year show with two big title matches. The first was for the tag titles, where Asuka and Makoto defeated Nanai Takahashi and Hiroyo Matsumoto. And in the main event, Arisa Nakajima defeated Ryo Mizunami for the Beyond the Sea title. I saw both of those matches. I thought that the Arisa-Ryo match was really good. They had a sequence late in the match where they just started doing shoot headbutts to each other. And the crowd, for the first time in a, really any crowd that I can remember, audibly made noise.
Whoa.
Because one of the headbutts was so strong, and I was like, like, it was a shocking moment to me where I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. The crowd is making sounds. But it was great. It was much better. They had had that title match, I think in the middle of the year, that I thought was not, didn't come together, was not great. I thought this one was really good. I went 4 stars on it. I'm assuming at this point, Mizunami will head back to America, head back to AEW. But excited for Arisa to have the title. She's my favorite wrestler, so I will never oppose her having the big Seedling title. And I'm looking forward to what happens with Seedling in the future. Oz had their big end of the year show on December 30th. Hiroyo Matsumoto and Rina Yamashita winning the tag titles from Mitsuki Aoki and Tsubasa Kuragaki, and Maya Yukihi retaining her title, the single, the Oz indiscriminate title, over you. Oz also had a show. Yes, over you. Oz also had a show on the 9th, which was evacuated. It was at Shinjuku Face, and it was evacuated because they had a fire. There was a fire in the basement of building, I believe is what it was. There's a sauna down there or something. So they did evacuate. There were pictures of Mayumi Ozaki in front of the building with a megaphone, I think, telling people what had gone on. But I believe everyone is safe. It was all okay. Everyone got out of the building. So that is good to hear, but a little bit of a scary moment. And I believe that the Sendai Girls show, or Sendai Girls is having a show there, or had a show there, that went ahead, because I think they took care of all the fire stuff, which is good to hear.
Yeah, that's good, because I was going to say that would displace a whole lot of wrestling shows if that place was badly damaged.
Yeah, I think it was in the basement, which is pretty far. Kelly, have you been to Shinjuku Face?
I never actually went to Shinjuku. I did Shinkiba First Ring, but I never went to Shinjuku Face.
Because I've seen one. I actually saw an Oz Academy show there. And it is in a very tall building, and I think it's on like the 15th floor or something. It's pretty high up. So if it happened in the basement, I'm assuming that it wouldn't really affect that, except for, of course, if there's a fire in the building, they don't want people hanging out on the 15th floor or whatever. Tokyo Joshi also had two more shows after their big January 4th show, where the Max Hart Tag Tournament started on January 8th. Moka Miyamoto and Yuki Arai defeating Pom Harajuku and Mihiro Kiryu in their tag tournament match. A bit of a surprise, as the less experienced team defeating the more experienced team. And then on January 9th, the team of Hikari Noah and Nao Kakuta, which have dubbed themselves Free Wi-Fi, defeating Haruna Neko and Kaya Torabami in their Max Hart tag tournament match. Noah and Nao deeming themselves Free Wi-Fi because they want everyone to watch their matches. So that's a fun,
name.
I couldn't announce that without also announcing that their tag team name is Free Wi-Fi.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I love that.
And then also, this is sort of tangential to Tokyo Joshi, but I'm putting it here because it's my show and I can do whatever I want. The Gaki no Fuchi Joshi Pro Wrestling Clockwork Gaki no Fuchi 2022 Gaki no Fuchi versus Prominent Show, which happened also on January 4th. from the previously mentioned Shinjuku face. This was the big annual beginning of January Miyako Matsumoto show. It had four matches: a Chris Brooks Suzu Suzuki hardcore match, a Risa Sera Miyako Matsumoto Gake no Fuchi rules match, a Prominence versus Sanshiro Takagi and Mao match, and a big no DQ 5-on-4 handicap match in the main event. Kelly, I know that you watched this show, so what did you think of it overall? Highlights from you.
I loved it. These Gake no Fuchi just nonsense shows are fantastic. The opener, the Chris Brooks versus Suzu Suzuki match, was awesome. I went 4.25 on that. Just a really great hardcore match. If you don't want the nonsense, you can jump out after that. I mean, you're going to get hit with some nonsense before from the singing of the intro to the show, which features Sawa following in and adding his little flourishes to the song as well. Later in the show, you will at some point ask if Mao is okay, because he keeps screeching. I'm not sure what that character is, but it's entertaining nonetheless. It's a lot of fun. It's dumb as hell, but just such a fun watch.
Yeah, the show's only about 2 hours, so it's a pretty quick watch. But yes, I will echo that if you've never watched the Gake Pro show, you just sort of have to go in with the understanding that unless you speak Japanese, which I do not, you will probably understand only about 10% of what's going on.
Yeah.
And that might be generous.
And who knows, even if you do speak Japanese, you still might not know what's happening.
But I thought the opening match was excellent. I think it's won the Chris Brooks Suzu Suzuki match. I thought it was very good. Actually had some people who don't regularly watch Joshi watch that match, and they came away very impressed by Suzu Suzuki, which is great to hear because I think she's great, and I'm glad that people are now finding out about her. I will also say, while we're talking about Prominence, they did announce recently that the Prominence shows until their official launch in February will be airing on Wrestle Universe, which is great to hear. I'm really happy that Wrestle Universe has become, or has sort of added these shows. They had the 01 show, not a Joshi show, but they had the 01 show from January 1st, now adding Prominence. They are obviously already have Tokyo Joshi, DDT, Noah, so a great value.
Whoa, you forgot Gunbare.
Gunbare, yes. They have a lot of stuff. It's a great value. You know, they just relaunched it. I think, Kelly, I don't know how you feel, because I think that you had more problems on the old system than me. I think the new system works really flawlessly.
I have had zero problems since the changeover.
The quality is really good. On shows where they have English and Japanese commentary, it's super easy to switch between them, like within the same window, which is really great. Instead of it being like two different video files. So highly recommended. If you are not subscribed to Wrestle Universe, this is a free plug for them. Go and subscribe. The Sendai Girls had a show on the 8th and 9th. And then Kelly is going to talk about some Sendai Girls wrestlers who visited some other promotions throughout the holidays.
Yeah, so on December 25th, Freedoms ran their annual Blood Xmas show, and Dash Shisako was in a six-person hardcore match. She teamed with Gunso and Masashi Takeda to beat Daisuke Masaoka, Kamui, and Rina Yamashita. That was just a fun trios match. I was not expecting Dash to be on that show, but then there she was. I really like that match, but if you're a deathmatch fan, watch the main event. It is my new match of the year between Jun Kasai and Violento Jack. Just crazy, crazy death match. And then on December 30th, Gleet ran their version 2 show. And this had two Joshi matches, the first of which was a UWF Rules style match, where Chihiro Hashimoto defeated Michiko Miyagi in a match that was essentially just a mauling. Hashimoto just beat the hell out of Miyagi. I think it was in like 4 minutes. Like it was brutal. Fun match, but yeah, I mean, not if you're Miyagi, but Taylor, you said you watched that one, right?
Yeah, I did. It was an interesting match because Miyagi is a great, talented, or contracted wrestler, I should say. And I think that was like the third or fourth match in, and none of the great talent had won any matches. Like Minoru Suzuki won his match as a member of Pancrase, which I always enjoy. But yeah, I thought it was really a mauling. There were some little spots of hope, but then it was mostly a just straight up destruction.
Yeah. And then later in the card, Dash Chisako defeated Yukari Hosokawa, who Chaco Pro fans may know better as Rinrin. I did not enjoy that match very much, to be honest. It went about like almost 10 minutes. Shouldn't have run that long. They gave Yukari way too much offense, and it wasn't great. She's not the best, I don't think. Dash was good as always, but I don't know. The match just didn't work for me, and I'm hoping Hosokawa gets better over time, but right now she hasn't shown me very much. And to be honest, I didn't think she was great in Choco Pro to begin with, so I don't know. We'll see. She's still incredibly young, so lots of room for improvement there.
And we will talk about some Sendai Girls stuff in a few moments, but next we will move on to Ice Ribbon, who had their yearly Ribbon Mania show on December 31st. Three big title matches, Akane Fujita defeating Rina Yamashita for the Fantast Ice title, Hamaka Hoshi and Ibuki Hoshi defeating Maya Yukihi and Risa Serra for the tag titles, and Tsukushi retaining her title over Ram Kaichou in her second defense of the Ice Infinity title. I'm happy to see Fujita winning the Fantast Ice title because it means, hopefully, that the prominence people will be sticking around. I know that they have some matches coming up, which we'll talk about, but I think losing them all, as I worried might happen when they all announced the prominent stuff, would be pretty tough, but glad to see that they will at least still be hanging around, maybe for big shows or spot shows or things like that. And then Ice Ribbon had some smaller shows on the 3rd, the 8th, and the 9th. Diana had two shows. They are running a title tournament to determine a new champion for their singles title on the 31st of December. Miyuki Takase defeated Haruka Umasaki, and Ayako Sato defeated Hanako Nakamori in the first round of that tournament. And then on January 9th, Nagisa Nosaki defeating Raiden Hagane, and Ayako Sato defeating Miyuki Takase in the semifinals. So those two victors will meet at the next Diana show, which we'll talk about in a minute. Marvelous, like Stardom, has a show on January 10th. Will have happened by the time this is released, but hasn't happened yet. The big, big match on that show, Chihiro Hashimoto versus Takumi Iroha for the AAAW rights to the single, I think the singles title and the tag titles that were won by Sendai Girls back at the Gaia show. Have a feeling that if Iroha wins, that those titles would then be defended. This is just for the rights to hold the titles in your company. And I know that before the Gaia show, Marvelous said that if they held the titles, they would be defended as real titles. And I'm sort of hoping that happens. So it
makes the most sense.
Looking forward to see this match. Their last match, which we talked about on the podcast, wasn't crazy about, but maybe they were saving it all for this big match, which has some big stipulations. Wave had a show on their monthly first day of the month show on January 1st, where Yuki Miyazaki defeated the champion Kairi Yoniyama and Miss Mongol to become the new Queen Elizabeth title holder. So that is everything that happened in the very busy last 2 weeks of Joshi. And here's everything that's coming up in the next 2 weeks. Stardom has 4 shows on the 15th, 16th, 22nd, and 23rd. Nothing has been announced for those shows yet, so we'll have to wait and see. Tokyo Joshi has 2 shows coming up. Both are going to have some Max Hart tournament matches. On the 15th of January, Yuka Sakazaki and Mizuki, the team of the Magical Sugar Rabbits, will take on Shoko Nakajima and Hyper Masao. And Yuki Kamifuku and Asuka, the returning Asuka, will take on Marika Kobashi and Raku.
And I wonder if they'll bring back the New Japan camera guy for the Kamiyo and Asuka entrance.
maybe. And then on the 19th, a little bit up in the air, but Miyu Yamashita and Maki Ito, 1-2 million, will take on the winner of the Yuka Kamifuku and Asuka, Marika Kobashi and Raku match. Rika Tatsumi and Miyu Watanabe will take on the winner of the Magical Sugar Rabbits and Nakajima and Masao match. And then 2 more matches, Nodoka Tenma and Yuki Aino, the Bakuretsu sisters, will take on Hikari Noah and Nao Kakuta, the team of Free Wi-Fi. And Suzume and Arisu Endo will take on Moka Miyamoto and Yuki Arai. So lots of tournament matches on those shows. Looking forward to that. Ice Ribbon has a number of shows coming up. The biggest show, they have a Korakuen Hall show on January 16th, Winter Story 2022. The big matches on that show, a singles match, Tsukasa Fujimoto and Makoto facing off. Maya Yukihi and Ram Kaichou teaming together to take on the team of Totoro Satsuki and someone who is to be announced, TBA, not X, but TBA. A triangle ribbon match, the champion Maika Osaki going up against Miyako Matsumoto and Yuki Mashiro. And the main event will be for the Ice Infinity title, Sakushi's third defense, defending against new tag team champion, one half of the new tag team champions, Ibuki Hoshi. Hoshi had that great match with Fujimoto for the title a number of months ago that was on my match of the year list. So looking forward to that. Also on the 23rd, the Ice Ribbon Show will feature a prominence offer hardcore match, where Akane Fujita and Suzu Suzuki will team up to face Mochi Miyagi and Risa Serra. So as I said, happy to see prominence continuing to have a spot in Ice Ribbon. Diana has their next show at Shinkiba First Ring on January 23rd. That will feature the finals of the Diana title tournament, Nagisa Nosaki versus Ayako Sato, and the debut of Diana's newest rookie, Kyoko. So that will be interesting to see a new rookie. I'm trying to think, when did Haruka Umasaki debut? I don't even remember, but it's been a while. And then Wave has a show on the 16th, January 16th. Saki and Hikari Shimizu will defend their tag team titles against Nagisa Nosaki and Takumi Aroha. So a pretty strong team there. But that is everything that is happening in the next 2 weeks of Joshi Wrestling. If Ice Ribbon does air live, we will cover that show. We often say that, and then they don't air live. But we'll keep our fingers crossed.
Look forward to talking about that Ice Ribbon show 3 months from now.
Kelly, do you have anything else to add?
I don't think so. I think we covered everything. There was so much.
Well, I will end on a serious note. Used to Kelly, this is usually the moment where he derails the podcast. but I will end on a serious note, which is that if you don't know, John Carroll recently announced the end of Wrestling Omakase, their podcast that they have been doing for just about 5 years now. I just wanted to give them a shout out, say happy trails. For those of you who listen to that podcast, you've probably heard me over there. I've been on that podcast a number of times, I think over 20 times. And John gave me a shot, let me on the show at a time where I had really never done any podcasting before, allowed me to come back many times. And I believe that's partially responsible for helping me to think that I could do a show like Jumping Bomb Audio. So Wrestling Omakase will be missed, but a big thank you and happy trails to John.
Yeah, I always enjoyed my time on that show. So I was sad to see it go, but you got to do what you got to do to keep yourself happy and keep yourself being a fan. So I expect it, the show to be back eventually. I think John will find their excitement for wrestling again. Because it really is, like, once it starts becoming work to watch it, it's not fun at all anymore. Like, that's why there's companies that'll watch, but then just for a while, like, just stop. Just, and then you'll come back and it's like, oh, wait, this is what I liked about this. Okay.
I will say, now that we have been, on this show are closing in on almost 2 years of doing this show, and I just keep thinking, we're pretty close, because there has been the debate in Japan we haven't talked about, that now they're allowed to do, you know, half attendance, but you can cheer, or full attendance, and it's the same restrictions. I do feel like we're closing in on that moment when wrestling is going to return to at least more normal. And as a show that has lived entirely in this strange world of clap crowds and things like that, I am thinking we'll get to that point and the crowds will be able to make noise again. And this show is going to become the most positive show you've ever heard. Every match will get 5 stars. We'll be like, oh my God, we could hear the crowd. It was amazing. I mean, I talked about that one spot in the Seedling match where I could hear the crowd, and I was like, this is the greatest thing I've ever heard. So excited for that. But I know, having gone through these 2 years of sort of abnormality, it's not always easy to do this stuff. So
yeah. If we start going like four and a half stars on like Harun and Echo versus Pom Harajuku matches, maybe keep us in check a little bit.
But that is our show. As always, check us out on Twitter at JBomb Audio, or Kelly at Comic Geek Kelly, or me at Tay Mainbow. Please subscribe to us on your podcast app of choice. If that podcast app of choice is Apple Podcasts, give us a 5-star rating and review. It would be very nice of you. Or if you're feeling super nice, you can donate to us at redcircle.com/shows/jumpingbombaudio. So that is all for our first episode of 2022, and we will see you again in 2 weeks.